Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fireside Chat. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home. This is my dog, Mr. Tubbs. And it is a rare sighting on your behalf that you're seeing Mr. Tubbs. Is his backside to the world? Yeah. Okay. It is extremely difficult to get a puppy to do the right thing in this regard. Is this TMI? That he's toilet trained. Does anybody care? But it's very hard to get him. Anyway, you saw him. Life is good. Talking about dogs, I want to thank a family in Illinois, in Crest Hill, the Rushes, Michelle and Gino, for this beautiful, I can't even describe it because it's Otto, may he rest in peace. It's this sort of thing, I don't even understand that it was just explained to me. It's all black, and then you scratch out to make the drawing. Called scratch art. Yes. Okay. Anyway, thank you very much. It's very sweet. And they lost their dog just recently, right? Yeah. Oh, and it even has scratched in, M. Rush. Nice. I get a lot of sweet things like that, and actually it does mean a lot to me. Okay. Anyway, I always begin with some thoughts. I have some thoughts on a very big subject. It's the subject of my recent column, and I hope you will read it. I hope you read my column every Tuesday. I have over 1,000 on the internet. I pour my heart into my columns. It's really, I think and hope, important work. So I have a question. When I read now and I hear a lot of talk about America should not be involved in any wars that are around the world or other tensions, that, you know, we have our own problems and we should take care of them first. So I decided to do what I am best at, to try to clarify issues. So when people say they're America first, do they mean America first or America only? And I am America first. And by the way, if you're watching from Romania, I think you should be Romania first. I believe that one puts one's country, unless it's run by an evil regime, that's a separate issue. I think that one puts one country first, that you put your family before other families. Is that wrong? Of course not. In fact, if anybody said, you know, I am just as committed to the welfare and well-being of other families as I am my own, I tell you this, I would not want to be a member of that person's family. One would hope that one's parents, one's spouse, they are most dedicated, that they put that family first. You're supposed to. That's the way it works. I mean, there are infinite number of examples. I cite in my article a very famous line from Jewish law. In deciding to which poor people you give charity, there's a rule. The poor of your city come first. Doesn't mean you neglect poor people elsewhere. It means that the poor of your city come first. And I cite other religious ideas that have influenced my life. So I have no issue with America first. I have an issue with America only. That's not moral. That's not, from an American perspective, true to America's self-image as trying to be a moral beacon in the world. The idea that all conflicts are their business and none of ours because we have our own problems. Did anybody say, yes, actually there were people who said, you know, between Churchill and Hitler, between Britain and Nazi Germany, hey, that's not our business. That's their problem. We have our own problems here at home, and we did. By the way, if the argument is first take care of the problems in your own country before you help any other country. You'll never help any other country because there will always be problems in your country. There's unless you create utopia, which is not possible on this planet, then there will never be a time when there are no problems to solve in one's country. So you have to make a moral judgment. When, in fact, do I get involved? That's the question. When do I get involved? By the way, there are all levels of involvement. There is the most direct soldiers' involvement. Then there is monetary and military equipment involvement. Then there's diplomatic involvement. Then there is moral involvement by saying the right thing. There was an article in a very prestigious conservative website, which I cite in my piece, where it said that American leaders should not even comment. He used the word even comment on the Middle East war that is currently at this moment taking place. Not even comment. Wow. That's not exactly a moral position. This, to me, should be self-evident, but we live in a morally confused age. America is the strongest country in the world, or has been the strongest country in the world. And to say, therefore, we will only guard our own country is just, I don't think it's morally right. If China wants to take over Taiwan, do we say, hey, that's not attacking America. Sorry, Taiwan. Have a nice day. I don't want to live in such a world where the strongest country on earth doesn't care what happens to any other country. That's not the way I envision America. That is not the way I envision the world. So it's a very brief and very clear subject. Does America first mean America only? If it does, count me out. If it doesn't, first doesn't mean only. So people should be honest. Do I mean first? If there's first, that means there's second and there's third. I give the example of baseball. There's first base. First base implies a second base and a third base. If there were only one base, it wouldn't be called first base. It would be called the base or the only base. First means there's a second and a third, not that there aren't any others. There is something, by the way, that I do put first, morality. Commitment to good and fighting evil is the highest value to me. I mean, God is the highest value, but God wants us to be good. That's God's primary demand. I've talked about that on the Fireside Chat and elsewhere all of my life, actually. But we live in a morally confused age, and the moral confusion is complete on the left, but it is not absent on the right. And this, I think, is an example. And now, let's go to your questions. All right, here we go.
Hello, Dennis. My name is Billy Prempa. I'm the 2024 congressional candidate for New Jersey's 9th District. And my question to you is regarding the election integrity. I want to know what your belief is on this. Do you believe that election fraud is happening in this country? Or do you believe that it is just a hoax that's made up by President Donald Trump?
Okay, thank you. What was his name again?
Billy.
Thank you, Billy. You don't meet many Billys these days. He's running for Congress. That's nice. Okay, I've been asked this question since the 2020 election. I don't know for certain what exactly happened, because there are so many different questions. One, have elections been played with? There's no doubt in my mind. I'll prove to you. Second, was there actual deliberate miscounting? Stuffed ballots, extra ballots, phony statistics. And third, if there was A and B, did it determine the election? Okay. So number one is the only one that I am certain about. I am certain that a lot was done to enable cheating to take place. Please understand what the left has done in the United States of America. They have made Election Day, Election Month, Election 3 weeks, depending on the state. They have abolished, essentially, the sanctity of Election Day. Not only Americans my age, Americans half my age, remember the time when you went to vote on Election Day, and if you knew you would not be in your city on that day, you asked for an absentee ballot. And you received one after you asked for one. Now, tens of millions of ballots are sent to people in advance. Enabling, anyone can understand, it enables fraud. And there's got to be a reason why this was done. Of course, it was done under the rubric of COVID, but it hasn't been abolished post-COVID. It was an excuse, COVID. People should go to the, if you don't want to vote at the poll and you don't ask for a ballot, don't vote. The abolition of Election Day by the left is not done in order to make elections more honest. Let's be honest about that. The flooding of people with ballots that they never even asked for is not in order to make elections more honest. The movement from physical paper ballots to computerized ballots is not done in order to make elections more honest. It is much more easy to deceive when everything is computerized than it is when everything is in a physical ballot. All of that should be obvious. Was there any fraud? Of course there was fraud. Was there enough to have determined the election? How about this for a really novel idea? This, I believe, should help both left and right, both Republicans and Democrats. Why don't we allow for serious investigation of it? Why every time people have brought honest propositions before courts, complaints before courts, have they been dismissed by judges who either lack the honesty or are politically motivated to throw out before there's even any evidence brought? If I were a Democrat, I really do believe this. If I were a Democrat, it would be in my interest to show the American people, look, we have nothing to hide. You bring your evidence. Let the American people see your evidence that you, those of you who claim a fraud took place, let's see it. But they don't. They suppress it. Just like they suppressed thousands of hours of video from January 6th of 2021. Why did they suppress it? Wouldn't you want the American people to be able to see for themselves what actually happened that day? I have a general rule, and I made it up actually spontaneously here at a fireside chat. You want to know who's telling the truth? Or you want to know the one who's lying or suppressing the truth? The one that censors. That's almost a 100% rule. Let's put it this way. If Democrats accuse Republicans of cheating in an election, I would ask Republicans, please allow them to bring all the evidence they can and let the American people see what the evidence is like instead of shutting it down every time. So I hope that helps, Billy, in answering your question. What I would like to see immediately, I would like to see a return to paper ballots. I would like to see a return to election day, not election month. Even if there is no fraud, election month is not healthy for a democracy. Because a lot of things happen in the last month before an election. There shouldn't be people voting 4 weeks before election day. What does election day mean then? It has lost its meaning, just like so many other special days in American life have lost their meaning, which is tragic, like President's Day, which means nothing. Okay, cool. Ready? Here we go. John, 43, Playa del Rey, California. Hi, Dennis. During COVID and the BLM riots, I often heard we were more divided than since the Vietnam War and even since the Civil War. Whereas we can narrow a specific moral issue to each of those conflicts, I can't settle or prioritize on only one issue that has polarized this country, but I know it is perpetrated by Marxist elites and our Chinese communist adversaries that have control of every sector of the fabric of our nation, education, government, media, entertainment, technology, and it has seeped into corporate America. In the worst case scenario, if we had another civil war, God forbid, what would ignite the flame, how would it be fought, and who would fight it? Okay, a few comments. I never make predictions, okay? There's no way that I would know how would it be fought, what would ignite the flame. Nobody ever knows would anyone have ever predicted what ignited the flame of World War I? That staggering slaughterhouse of young people in Europe? That it would be because in Serbia, Archduke Ferdinand would be assassinated? No one predicted that. Millions of people will die because Archduke Ferdinand will be assassinated by a Serbian. I make no predictions. However, we are more divided than at any time, I believe, in American history, and including the Civil War, which is amazing because that was a war. Civil War, the division was really over one thing, slavery, which is a pretty big thing. let's be clear. But it was one thing. Today, it is not one. Most Southerners and most Northerners agreed on most issues. They didn't agree on the huge issue of slavery, but they agreed on almost all other issues, generally speaking. Today, the left and right agree on nothing. Absolutely nothing. I can't even think of anything they agree on. Do you believe that children should be given hormone blockers? Do you understand that alone? Do you understand the gulf that is between Americans? Do you believe that 12-year-old girls who say they're boys should be given estrogen blockers and other hormone blockers? That boys who say they're girls at the age of 10 should be given testosterone blockers, stuff that affects you for the rest of your life? Do you believe that 18-year-old girls should have their breasts cut off if they say they're boys? An 18-year-old girl can't smoke a cigarette, but she could say, I want my breasts removed? That's a pretty big division, is it not? It's a pretty big division if you think it's okay for a college to have an all-black dormitory. That was called racism when I grew up. Pure, undiluted racism. The only people who were for all-black dormitories were Southern bigots. And they were called Southern bigots. Today, they're called progressives. On the Middle East, the Democratic Party was noted for its great support of Israel because we share virtually all values, we Americans, with Israel. There was no other case in the world, in modern history, of vast numbers of people in Western society supporting a police state against a free state. Hamas is a police state. They kill their adversaries. Their Palestinian adversaries. And we have vast numbers. See my debate at Oxford. It's gone viral on YouTube. Just put in Dennis Prager, Oxford Union, right? Oxford Middle East debate, where I make that point. Where is their agreement? So yes, the division is staggering in the United States at this time. That is correct. As I pointed out, whenever I hear this naive claim, oh, we have so much more that binds us together than separates us, I don't know what I dislike the most. Meaningless cliches or lies? People offer these pablum. Oh, there was a great pablum example. What was it? It was the head of some school district, and the woman said, "You know, I always explain to teachers and students that, what was the line? Oh, yes, violence is never a solution to any problem." And I was thinking, that is so typical of the drivel that young people are taught. Really? It's never a solution? So let me understand something. Somebody comes into your house and he's about to kill you or one of your loved ones in the house. Violence is not a solution to that problem. What is? A cup of tea? What is a solution? The woman who said this happens to be black, so I'd like to ask her a question. What was the solution to slavery? Was it violence or nonviolence? There was violence called a civil war. A lot of Americans died to get rid of slavery. It did seem to solve the problem of slavery. It didn't solve the problem of racism entirely, no question, but it did solve the problem of slavery. Human beings were no longer chattel. They were no longer property. That was solved by violence. The Holocaust was ended by violence. World War II was ended by violence. It's a stupid comment. That's why it's what I'm saying. I'm getting impassioned, and I love being calm, so forgive me. But I don't like nonsense offered as profundity. And that's what that is. Violence is never a solution. That's a lie. It's a stupid lie. There are intelligent lies and stupid lies. So, okay, you got me started. No more questions from John in Playa del Rey. Gets me worked up. We got a South Africa question. What's our story?
You should be good for
Good for another one? By the way, I might be coming to South Africa next April. Davey, 26, South Africa, JHB. Anybody know what JHB is? It's South Africa JHB, Johannesburg. You have to have been there to know that. It's true. Okay. Hey, Dennis, my question is, my sister and brother-in-law are constantly threatening to get divorced as they are not happy, but they say they cannot get a divorce because of their one kid they have together. What are your thoughts about staying together in an unhappy marriage just for kids? Thank you for your input. Wow. That's worthy of a whole opening segment. It's actually worthy of a lot of time. I have given this a lot of thought. By the way, full acknowledgement, I divorced with children, and it was the most painful thing in my life. My two sons are doing extremely well, thank God. They're happy, they're married, they're good people, they share my values. They're kind, considerate. I mean, I'm really a lucky parent. Before I ever married, I worked a lot with kids of college age. And I realized something. Again, I not only was not divorced, I had not even been married. And I said to friends, you know, it's really amazing, my thoughts on divorce. It seems that the issue is not divorce, it's what happens after divorce that has the worst effect on a child. No child thrives, well, some children thrive with divorce. If the parents are truly at war with each other, then the child does thrive in a more peaceful environment. But generally speaking, it is a truly painful thing for the vast majority of children. But if the parents handle it well afterwards, and what does well mean? They don't fight, at least not in front of the children, and they don't badmouth the other. That is key. The number of parents who have poisoned their children against the other parent because of anger at the divorce is very large. And by the way, since I believe truth is the greatest thing you can pursue, it's usually the wife, the ex-wife, poisoning kids against the dad because she's so angry and she feels that she could do that. That, to me, is evil. It would be evil if a man did it, and some men do it, but I've studied this a lot. Do I think you should stay together for the sake of your children? So here's an interesting aspect of that question. Let's say you do. Your child is 6, or your children are 6, 8, and 12. So when will you divorce? So the options are never, now, or as very many people say, when they get into college. So let me tell you something. This is good news and bad news. It's very rough on college kids when their parents divorce. It's rough in college, and it's rough in elementary school, and it's rough in high school. But the idea that I will wait till they get into college is a well-intentioned, usually erroneous idea. Should you stay together if it's a truly miserable marriage? The first thing you should do is try to make it less miserable. Of course, divorce should be the last option. However, last, just like I talked about first before, America first, divorce last, last implies that it does take place. Last doesn't mean never. Last means last. So yes, you should go for therapy and you should work at it. And if it still doesn't work, and by the way, it doesn't even mean one is a villain. You could have two fine people who can't stand each other, who can't stand living with each other. Oh, I could tell you so many stories on this. We should definitely. Let's do staying together for the sake of kids as an opening one time. So if you can promise God and yourselves that you will act maturely, and no matter how annoyed or angry you get at the other person, you will not divide your child. Say, you can't, if you love me, you can't love him. Or if you love me, you can't love her. And don't bad, even if you don't like the other, and very often that happens, your child does. And that matters. You want your child to love the other spouse, even if you don't. That takes maturity. Maturity is at a premium. But I just want you to know, I've done shows. I've asked on my radio show. Call me up and tell me if you wish your parents had not divorced, or if you wish you had not divorced and waited. It's worth hearing what people have to say. A lot of people whose parents divorced ultimately come to the belief they did the right thing. Sometimes they didn't do the right thing. Life, as I have said from the beginning of my radio career, is messy. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.